Welcome to Water Cooler Christianity, a podcast hosted by the North Carolina Conference of the United Methodist Church. This is a podcast dedicated to exploring pop culture and its intersections with faith and the gospel. My name is Aaron Hayworth. I'm a pastor, husband, sitcom junkie, and the proud father to three fur babies. And I'm joined by my co-host, Laura Whitman.
Hi, I'm Laura Whitman. I am a pastor, a pastor's wife, a mom, and I have aspirations of bringing balance to the force one day. So one of the things that we wanted to do in this is to show you a little bit of what we'll be doing in the future when we have guests on our show. Today, it's just the two of us sort of talking a little bit about theology and pop culture and some of the things that we really enjoy that are close to our hearts. But we're going to start with a few questions that we thought would be fun and engaging as sort of little icebreakers that we'll be using in the future. So, Aaron, fun question for you as we start out today. Describe your walk with Christ in two words.
Messy and lovely. What about you?
For me, I would say humorous and unexpected.
Yeah. Jesus will do that.
He will. He's got a sense of humor for sure.
Okay, question two. What is your movie theater candy of choice? You get one pick of a candy that can only be purchased in a movie theater.
Okay.
None of the stuff you smuggled in.
None of the stuff I smuggled in. So
yeah,
nothing
that you brought in your purse.
Okay. Not the homemade pumpkin pie sub sandwich from Subway. Yeah. My favorite candy of choice at the movie theater is the chocolate chip cookie dough bites. And what's funny is I rarely get them because I have to balance what my children want with what I want, which means they win.
Yeah,
but obviously. Chocolate chip cookie dough, they're the best, and they go so great with popcorn. What about you? What would be your candy of choice?
It's got to be Milk Duds, because when you eat Milk Duds, they get stuck in the back top part of your teeth. And so then it's like bonus snack. Like you just keep finding the little bits of the Milk Duds.
It's funny that what you think is the good part of the Milk Dud is the reason I avoid Milk Duds. So
to each their own.
That's very true. Who is your favorite sinner?
I think my favorite sinner is Macho Man Randy Savage.
Would you like to unpack that for us?
Nope. we'll leave that to a later date. That'll be for our wrestling episode. Special wrestling episode.
Sounds fantastic. Yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah. And who is your favorite sinner?
It would be a close battle between my husband and Marcion. So.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to unpack that either.
Yeah. I didn't know we were doing people we knew.
Oh, yeah, well. If it's not people we know, then, you know, I think someone who contributes greatly is Michael Scott. And I'm talking like the character Michael Scott.
Your favorite sinner can be a fictional character.
Yeah, so Michael Scott, after my husband, you know, real life people.
Yeah.
Michael Scott would be.
Well, Macho Man Randy Savage kind of straddles the line between fictional and real.
That's very true. So, what is real?
Yeah.
You know, who knows? Is there any such thing as real?
Man.
I know.
Too deep.
Existentialism.
That's too deep for this early on in the show. So let's get to the next question.
If you were stranded on a deserted island, what TV show, assuming you have access to Netflix and internet, what show would you watch?
But just the one show off of Netflix.
Just
because
the one.
That Netflix app has crashed.
The streaming is
limited. Well, no, it's not on Netflix anymore, but 30 Rock.
Oh, okay.
With Tina Fey, the genius.
She is a genius. Yeah. She really
just
is.
Just love that show.
It's
love
a great show.
All the cast on there. And you, same question. Desert Island TV show.
To go along with my favorite sinner, it would be The Office. I've watched The Office at least 8 times in its entirety. And I refuse to watch new things because I just, you know, just watch The Office over and over again.
It's a good thing that both of these shows have several seasons, because the only other thing that I was thinking of was like, what's something that has like 20 seasons, like Law and Order SVU?
Right.
But
that
would be like a real bummer.
Grey's Anatomy's getting up there nowadays.
I just don't want to be sad on that island.
Right.
Like, I've got enough.
Right.
Between trying to find coconuts and...
Yeah. I didn't even bring a thing to open the coconuts with.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's really, it's a struggle. It's a struggle.
Okay, next question. What is the most beloved movie you've seen in a theater? The most cherished memory you have of being in a theater?
Well, that's the most cherished memory would be when I saw The Lion King as a kid. I was so excited because we had this really cool theater in downtown Reidsville. I don't even know if it exists anymore, but it was this really cool theater that had a balcony and an actual stage because they used it for theater productions. And so I remember they were finally putting The Lion King there, and it was way after it had already been out for everyone else. So we finally got to see it. And I remember being so excited the night before. I could not sleep. I don't think I've ever been that excited for a movie in my adult years. But as an adult, most cherished movie would be Rogue One. And it's just, there's few movies that get me in the heart more than Rogue One does.
The scene on the beach.
Oh, man.
That's where the movie should have ended, but we can talk about that at a later date as well.
Yeah, that'll be another episode.
Yeah.
What about you? Most beloved movie in theaters?
So, since you did two, one for a child and one for an adult, I feel compelled to do two as well. Same situation with like the cheap dollar theater being the scene of the first. When I was a kid, my parents took me to see Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring for my birthday. And I was not a Tolkien fan at the time. So I just did not really find it like compelling before we got there. But as soon as we hit the theater and, you know, the narration hits, I was hooked and have since gone. And those books have carried me through some times. But then I guess further into adulthood would be the first movie that my wife and I ever went to go see on a date, which was The Bourne Ultimatum.
Oh, wow.
Because I got to pick the movie. And yeah, that's just the kind of person I am.
Sounds exciting.
Lots of stuff exploding.
I mean, who doesn't love that? Throughout this podcast, one of the things that we are wanting to do is to sort of have conversations around pop culture and how that intersects with our faith and how pop culture can show us things that are relevant to discipleship and to our lives. And today we wanted to dive in talking about the theme of superheroes. And we'll be coming back to superheroes from time to time, most definitely, especially because the world of superheroes has gotten so big with movies and comic books and TV shows and all the things there are to keep up with. But Aaron, I have to ask you, who is your favorite superhero?
I think my favorite superhero is Spider-Man.
Oh.
Yeah. I like Spider-Man because he, and many people have kind of made notice of this, he's the only superhero that you regularly see struggling to meet rent. Not just some like, that Spider-Man, he's all right by me.
Yeah. He's a real guy.
Yeah.
You know.
He's got problems.
Yeah. I mean, even down to girl problems and, you know.
Too many
girl problems.
Yeah. So, what about you? Favorite superhero?
My absolute favorite superhero is Wonder Woman. There's no question about that. I'm even wearing Wonder Woman shoes today.
My goodness.
So, yes, I love Wonder Woman. I have, you know, Wonder Woman costume, and cosplay is a regular part of our life with, you know, our nerd culture and comic conventions.
Can you describe to people what cosplay is for the lay listener?
Cosplay is what all the cool kids do on the weekends, which is basically you're really into costuming. So my husband and I, one of the things that unites us in our love is comic book conventions and going to things like SuperCon and Conapalooza and all these big things that take place around us. And so cosplay is just dressing up as a character. You know, for me, I really identify with Wonder Woman. And so it's just being who my true self really is, which is a superhero. But what I love about Wonder Woman is she manages to show compassion and care in the midst of her, you know, superhero bigger than life-ness that she has. And so I think she's great. And she manages to be poised in the midst of all that she does, too.
Yeah.
So I like to pretend that I'm as cool as she is.
Yeah, dress up as Wonder Woman. It gives you some confidence.
It does.
I I always struggle with who to dress up as because as a bald man, you notice there are not that many good guys that are bald.
No, it's Lex Luthor.
Lex Luthor, Kingpin, Red Skull, you know, the list goes on.
Kingpin's a good one, though.
Yeah. I mean, well, the bad part is to dress up as all of these people, all I have to do is wear a suit and shave my head.
That's right.
and then I'm set.
Your costume is spot on. It's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Did it myself. Did my own haircut.
So. We have we do quite a bit of different cosplay. So for one, I have, you know, Rey. My husband has Han Solo. So we have a little bit of the Star Wars going on, and then there's Supergirl and Superman and The Flash. And so, you know, we don't discriminate. Yeah. There's a whole spectrum
and
there.
And so do you bring this same level of intensity you do to cosplaying to, say, the nativity scene or VBS skits?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, and VBS this year was pretty intense at my husband's church. We did a whole theme of superheroes. So every week we had like some serious cosplay and skits written out, and it was, you know, it was great. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to do the nativity scene, you got to be authentic. You got to have real costumes that, you know.
Yeah, I love to be a shepherd.
Oh, yes.
Having a little stick.
Yeah, having the stick is, yeah.
It's like,
it's a powerful place to be.
Before I'm holding a stick, I'm just a guy that hangs out with sheep. When I have the staff, it's like, oh, well, I'm a shepherd now. It really helps me.
It changes the whole dynamic. Yeah.
It makes the Bible come to life.
That's right. That's right. You know, and that's where we mess up with the angels in the nativity scene. We're really good at putting the halos, but if you don't have the wings right, can you even fly?
Gosh. Yeah. Well, you know? We don't really know the anatomy of angels.
It's true.
So I might challenge that a little bit. But like, we don't know, where are their wings?
Well, who knows? Yeah, and there's not even...
Popular iconography can lead us to presume maybe somebody saw an angel and they were like, oh, they definitely have wings.
Right, right. Or we just like the idea of angels having wings.
Yeah, because we like the idea of having
maybe
wings.
They drank a lot of Red Bull. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. A little anachronistic, but...
I mean, you know. So moving along...
Yeah, superheroes.
If you had... any superpower, if you could have any superpower, what would you have?
I really love Jean Grey from X-Men because she's a telepath, so she can read and empathize with people, but she also has telekinesis.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if that's greedy. It kind of feels greedy to me that she's so awesome, but I think a mix of those, kind of being able to read people's minds and share their feelings, I love that.
That would be kind of scary, I think.
Yeah, it's a big burden.
There's some people, I think maybe you would expect them to have really deep thoughts, but maybe, you know, maybe there's not as much there, or maybe there's some really deep
stuff.
Yeah,
maybe we'll never know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that for me, once again, going to Wonder Woman, you know, what she really realized, first of all, she has this amazing strength, you know, that's just unreal, but also... to have the lasso of truth, I think, would just be awesome, especially as the mom of three little boys.
Yeah, but is that a superpower or is that a super weapon?
It's a super weapon, but it would make me feel powerful. So there's the access to the truth in all situations. That would be great. But maybe as far as superpower, I think telekinesis would be a pretty cool one, you know.
Yeah. Make chores a lot easier.
Yes. You know. It would. It'd be amazing. You just sit on the couch and, you know, have a clean home
at the same time.
It'd be brilliant. Although I wonder how much of your brain power it would have to take up to do it, you know.
But really, how much brain power do you use while you're watching TV, too? So I feel like you've got some to go around.
That's true. Especially if I'm watching The Office for the 10th time.
Yeah. Your mind already has the dialogue. It doesn't need that
exactly.
extra input.
Exactly. So you may have seen recently, there was a video with Justin Willman, who has a show, Magic for Humans, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
So he, in this video that was going around from his show, he does this sort of thing where he gathers in a park and he gets everybody to join in with him on this sort of trick that he's going to play. And they set it up, and then some unsuspecting person comes along and they make him think that he has disappeared. They do a disappearing act.
The people come ahead of time and they all agree to play this trick.
Right. And so they're all in on this trick, and this person comes along that they pick to be the guinea pig or the person for the trick, and they make him think he's disappeared. Now, this person is, you know, part of this trick. Everybody's sort of acting like, oh my goodness, we can't see him. They're even going up and taking pictures, and it looks like he's not there. But what's interesting is that he starts going around and doing things to people in the area that they're doing this trick. So he lays down with someone who's laying on a blanket in the park, or he starts drinking people's drinks. And so it forces us to think about the question, along with the idea of superpowers, especially if you could be invisible or
read people's thoughts.
Exactly. If you had no inhibitions, like these people start to think in this magic trick, what would you do?
Yeah. What are the implications of that? I think it's deeply related to who we think we're accountable for our actions.
Right.
So that's like the God question there is, like, even though nobody else can see if you do right or wrong, even though nobody else can see if you're carrying yourself in an upright and truthful manner, mm-hmm. Wonder Woman, are you still righteous?
Right.
Or pretending or trying to be better than what you are?
Right.
And so I think for me, I'd like to say that I would still try to live a just life. But, you know, I think when you have power, whether that's money, whether that's physical strength, whether that's any kind of power that you have on earth, you're tempted to abuse it. Mm-hmm. And so I think with a greater level of that power and with the lack of inhibition or social accountability, you probably try to get away with some stuff, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So are we, with our philosophical bent here, are we good for the sake of being good or good because we're being observed?
Yeah. And do we realize that we're still being observed by God? Do we still acknowledge God's omnipresence when we don't have the omnipresence of people around us?
Right. Right. So I think this is kind of funny. Being in church a lot, as we are, as pastors working in the Methodist church, a lot of times you'll hear people say things like, you can't say that or you can't do that because you're in the sanctuary and God can hear you. And so sometimes we limit God to sort of being in this
confined box.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But if you wouldn't say it in the sanctuary or do something in the sanctuary, would we do it out in the world? Should we do it out in the world? Is God still observing us?
Yeah. And sometimes as being a person of the cloth, being a pastor, you carry God's presence with you a little bit, or people put an extra weight on your presence.
So right.
I stepped outside at a gathering recently, and I stepped out by this group of younger people who were at a table. I was wearing my clerical collar. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, what's up, cool kids table? And one of the younger girls, she was not much younger than me, said, did you notice how everybody was really quiet as soon as you came around? And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to the playground and hang out with the real cool kids.
No, it's funny what that carries with it, because I tend to be a clergy collar wearer. And a lot of times people see that and they're like, oh, well, why would you do that? Why would you want people? A lot of pastor friends want to be undercover
sometimes. Especially in the grocery store, yeah.
Right. You know, why are you wearing your clergy collar? And for me, my biggest reason is, one, as female clergy, I don't have to think about what I'm wearing, which makes it nice. You just throw on a clergy collar and go. But two, it's nice when you go out to be able to connect with people in ways that you wouldn't. So maybe in some ways, that's kind of our own little clergy superpower that we have, is it's like putting on the cape
notoriety,
to some degree.
Yeah.
Right.
But
it's
not
like,
in a good way always.
Right, not always.
People carry images, especially as a man wearing the clergy collar, if I have my hands in my pockets, I'm a Roman Catholic priest.
Right.
And which carries a lot in this present moment.
Yes.
With what it means to be Christian, universally Christian. So people carry a lot of baggage with them to what you talk about, wearing a collar.
Right, right. When you think about even Spider-Man, going back to your favorite character, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. So how do we carry that cape, that notoriety with us, because then all of a sudden you're not undercover.
Yeah. You know? And then how do we, well, this seems to be very confined to a clergy space, but I mean, for Christians in general, mm-hmm. How do we conduct ourselves when we fall short?
Right.
When we fail to live up to, if somebody sees you wearing a cross in the grocery store or in traffic and you honk at them, or you like do something out of turn, mm-hmm. How do you recover from that?
Because right.
People will judge you in part based on your identity, whether you're a churchgoer, whether you're not a churchgoer. People will associate you with what you wear, with what you represent, which is, it's a heavy responsibility
right.
for all people.
Right. Well, and this is the honest truth from a preacher to the world. I don't have any sort of Jesus sticker or identifying mark on the back of my car, because I know that when I'm in my car, sometimes I'm not always the nicest person. So I like to be under I like to be undercover and have that special invisibility so that no one says, "Oh my goodness, did you see what that person
preacher
with the clergy
cut me off." Yeah.
Not show the grace of God at all.
Yeah. One of the things that I told my wife when I was going to take the first job as being a pastor of a church, I said, I really need to learn how to drive more Christianly. Because, there's something. And I guess driving a car is a kind of power, too. Mm-hmm. When you get behind the wheel, there's a degree of separation between you and the other people.
Right.
You're separated physically, but also mentally. So you can dehumanize people. You can think that, oh, I can get away with this because
right.
I'm behind the wheel or because I'm doing this. And so, yeah, it goes back to superpowers. When you're in this situation where you're not as observable,
mm-hmm.
you got the tinted windows, you've got the sunglasses on. How do you act when people aren't around to hold you accountable by their
right.
very presence?
Right.
And that's just one of the continually hard parts of life for everyone.
Right. Well, and I think especially right now in our current society, the way that we don't really remember to treat each other like human beings a lot of time, and that sense of invisibility permeates even how we react and interact with each other, even on social media. You know, about invisibility and how that lowers our inhibitions and the way that we speak to one another, the way that we write things that you would never say to another human being, at least to their face.
Yeah,
you would hope.
Or at least you hope that nobody would say those kind of things.
Right. But it lowers that reality because we're not having those face-to-face interactions. And so maybe visibility is extremely important for us as Christians, to not be able to just hide, you know, and to disappear. But we need that sort of interaction with one another.
Yeah. And there's a risk there.
Right.
There's a risk inherent when you wear the cross on around your neck, or you wear the Baptist shirt or the Methodist mm-hmm. shirt or the whatever shirt when you're in the grocery store or in your job or in your community. There's a risk that you take on that says, I'm willing to be accountable to the community I belong to mm-hmm. for the actions that I do out here.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like I'm going in circles, but.
No, but I mean, it's true. I think about even relating it back to the con world and the world of cosplay. You know, when you go to a comic book convention, and this is me showing my nerdiness again, but when you go to I know, who knew? When you go to a comic book convention, there's a lot of people who go just to go. You know, they're dressed, you know, in their normal stuff, t-shirts, jeans, whatever. But a lot of people really, really are into the costuming part. And when you go, when you dress like that, you're going to be noticed. You're going
to see and to be seen.
Right, right. But it's participatory in a really crazy way. You know, it's not just about one or two people. It's about, you know, that whole community. But you go for the sake of being noticed. And while you're there, you're that person. And you better be in character, because somebody will come up to you and say, okay, tell me about Wonder Woman. Or, you know, tell me about this character that you're dressed as.
Or a four-year-old girl will come up to you and say, oh, you're Ray. Can I take a picture with you?
And that's exactly what happens. So you're representative of the pop culture thing that you're trying to, you know, display. Yeah. The time.
Yeah. And nobody's perfect. So then at the end of the day, when we have our shortcomings,
right,
when you forget your dialogue or you forget how to act, or you fall short in some way, as people in general have been known to do, that's where we need forgiveness.
Right.
We need a little bit of grace when we don't hold up the standard, when we don't hold up the ideal of what it means to be Wonder Woman or Ray or a Christian.
Right. But I think that's one of the things that is so great about comic books and superheroes, is that so many of them are rooted in that pain and that disaster and those mistakes that have happened. There's this sense in which, in their shortcomings, they grow out of it to do something with it. You know,
yeah, they grow from their flaws.
Well, and, you know, Bruce Wayne, for example, you know, his arrogance is what helps him to be so successful as Batman. You know, it's a human flaw in a lot of ways. He doesn't have a lot of great relationships or, you know, people who like him for who he is. But that arrogance is what fuels him, you know, to be able to save people. And that doesn't mean you should go be a very arrogant person, but the
although he does have some redeeming qualities, he did for some reason adopt a gaggle of children.
Right, a gaggle.
Just robins. We got to replace this one.
Gaggle's an appropriate word. Isn't that like what geese are? Like a gaggle of geese? Yeah.
A
flock of robins.
Yeah. Well, you talk about superhero flaws. So what are the flaws in the characters that you cosplay as that appeal to you most? As for Ray, as for Wonder Woman, as for Superwoman or Supergirl?
Well, for Ray, I mean, it's her insecurity about where she comes from. And, you know, she's this amazing person who comes out and defies all odds. You know, she's this girl who lives in a horrible place by herself in the desert. And yet she comes out of that to overcome that and to do these amazing things that nobody expects her to do. You know, even with the marketing for Force Awakens, they led you to believe that Finn is the one who's going to become
the Jedi. Yeah.
Right. You know, even in the toy packaging, he comes with the lightsaber and all this other stuff. You know, Rey just has her stick and BB-8. And so it doesn't, BB-8's cool, but it doesn't tell you the story. You know, BB-8 belongs to Poe. They don't even go together, really.
Yeah.
So even in the marketing, you're not led to believe that she's going to be
the hero.
Yeah. And yet she overcomes all of that, but she overcomes her insecurities. But then you come back to even The Last Jedi, and her insecurities are played on constantly.
Yeah, how she can go from, and that's a deeply Christian message in itself.
Right.
How we can go from being no people to being God's people.
Right.
How we can go from having no name and then being under the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that's
exactly
the holy family that we kind of find belonging in.
Right, exactly.
Even if you don't have a strong family of origin, even if you don't have a strong relationship in your own life, you can find meaning in the Force. No, in God.
But it is, though. I mean, for Rey, you know, she doesn't have any identity with her people or where she comes from, but the Force really becomes her family. And, you know, in the same way with Christianity, when we let ourselves be a part of, you know, the light of God, you know, when we have that sort of the light of Christ, and it, you know, it sounds hokey, we make it a Sunday school message, but at the same time, when we're, when what our power comes from is that light of Christ, we don't have to be able to identify who we are alone. We identify who we are in God.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm really loving this. We started on superheroes, but now we've made it to Star Wars.
And yeah, I always somehow find my way
to
Star Wars.
You gotta settle in the Star Wars here, but, Rey's experience in The Last Jedi, spoiler, turn this off if you have not seen The Last Jedi.
Go watch The Last Jedi and
watch
come back.
The Last Jedi. Pause it. Come back. It's on Netflix. If you don't have a Netflix account, ask Laura for her login and password.
Yeah, there's probably like 50 people using it anyway. It's fine.
Yeah. We'll talk about the ethics of that later. But Rey, as you're talking about, like finds meaning, finds purpose in the Force. But who does that put her in contact with? Mm-hmm. But the crotchety old Master Luke Skywalker.
Right.
Who in his life has lost his saltiness a little bit.
Yeah.
And the newness of Rey's faith, of Rey's belief, kind of sets him on fire again, helps him come back to the beginning. And that's so true of anybody that's been in the church. Like you witness a baptism, you witness somebody else making that next step in their life, making that commitment. Mm-hmm. That takes all the people who have soured, who have gotten a little forgetful of what brought them to that place in the first place, and they find new life.
Well, and that's what's so great and so beautiful about baptism in the United Methodist Church is that we don't just watch it, but we participate in it. Mm. You know, we get to say that we are going to support that person, that we're going to bring them up in the church, that we're going to look out for them. You know, there's a participatory nature to it in which we identify them as our children too, you know, no matter how old they are.
I agree to this. That's what we say. We say, I agree to this.
Right. That we're going to support them, you know, and support the church, and that we're going to bring them up. And so, yeah, there's a sense in which Luke is renewed by Rey's her light, you know, the light that she shares, even in the midst of her struggles. You know, she's not without struggle. And one of the things that really ruined Luke is his fear. I mean, fear was what kept him from having, you know, the relationships he should have had. Fear drove him to do something, you know, without getting too spoilerish. Fear is what drove him to make the mistakes that he made. And that, you know, fear is letting the light be overtaken. Mm. By darkness, you know, in a lot of ways.
I love how it always comes back to Star Wars.
It does. It's what I know. There's
it's home base.
It is. It's my comfort zone. Star Wars is. But, you know, it's the Force not only brings her in touch with Luke, but it brings her in very close proximity to Kylo Ren in a way that's very confusing in the movie because, you know, you think one thing's going to happen and then the relationship doesn't. It goes back to exactly where it's supposed to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And it kind of goes to show. And I mean, you can see this in different superhero and sci-fi genres and all the classic literature of the world. Like you don't just become a good person by hanging around other good people.
Right.
You don't just go from where you were to what you want to be.
Right.
You, in order to grow, in order to find your light, your compass, your faith, you have to encounter struggles. Mm-hmm. You have to encounter the enemy,
right,
as it were. And that is a proving ground of sorts for who you will become. Mm-hmm. And we fall short in those tests all the time. But in our successes, that's where we find who we really are.
Right. So along those lines, what we see is that a theme, one of the reasons I think that we identify with movies so well, with comic books so well, with anything along these lines, is that We identify through the struggles, whether it's a struggle of knowing who you are, where you've come from, whether it's a struggle of losing a loved one that fuels us to do more, to do better, whether it's trying to fix our past mistakes. What is it that really causes us to keep coming back to this, to the idea of superheroes and feeling connected to them the way that we do?
I think it's the way we can relate to suffering with people in different life situations, with people literally in superhero cases, people from other planets.
Right.
There are some green people that, like Martian Manhunter, that are more relatable characters than some anthropomorphic ones that you look at who they've lost. Parents,
right,
wives, children,
right,
husbands, like all the different things you could lose: integrity, your home place, your sense of family belonging. And all of those are things that we go through in one way or another. And maybe for some of us, it's not in the exact way that we had our home world exploded.
Right.
But the kind of catastrophe that leads to these tests of will, these tests of character, are very relatable to us. We all have our moments of calamity, our moments of catastrophe that we endure. And what we make of those is part of the story of who we are. It's not all the story of who we are, but it is a part of it. And so I think that's why we relate is... we can see in maybe Spider-Man's struggle to move on from the death of Uncle Ben, a point in our life where we have a flashback to a promise unkept.
Right, right.
An oath that we swore that we failed to uphold.
Mm-hmm.
And we can ask ourselves, what am I going to make of this now?
And I think it's a reminder that it doesn't feel good when we make mistakes, but it's a reminder that it is human to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And that it is okay. Yeah. You know, and in our faith, you go back to baptism, you know, and to becoming a member of the church, even, when we make those affirmations of faith, we also acknowledge that God is still with us, that, you know, having God for the journey makes those mistakes a little bit more bearable. You know, we know there's a way to come out of it. And whether we have ways to identify in this world or whether we feel like we've lost our way sometimes, I think, without getting too preachy, that's what
you
I do.
I would never know.
But it's a way for us to realize that we aren't alone and that there are things that, you know, maybe we're not going to put on the superhero cape or...
Maybe we will.
You know, I'm not going to rule that one out. Maybe we're not going to shoot webbing from our arms and, you know, whatever iteration of Spider-Man you're reading or watching. We're not going to build things that shoot webbing out of our arms. But, you know, whether those things happen for us, I'm not going to rule out the possibility, or whether they don't, there's still ways that we can be restored through our moments of weakness and our moments of trial.
Yeah. And I mean, all media that we consume, all stories that we read, in some way, I like to think bolster us or hold up a critique to us. So the fact that we read superhero stories is formative or deformative in some way. And I like to think that we learn from the best actions and from the worst, just like we learn from, you know, I think the most superhero-y books of the Bible, like Acts or various Old Testament prophets sent on unforeseen journeys.
Right.
We learn from the things they did right, the things they did wrong, their character flaws, and we're bolstered by them in some way. That's why I think it's good to revisit these. Maybe not in the mass quantities that I consume superhero content, but...
Well, and don't you think it's great, though, that we tell the bad parts of the story to you? You know, we don't just remember the highlight reels. And I think that's one mistake that in our culture that we make a lot of right now is that we don't put a lot of the real details. You know, we have our Instagram versions of who we, we have our filtered Instagram versions of who we are. And it creates this ideal of perfection that I think is quite unhealthy. You know, we hold ourselves to these ridiculous standards thinking that's how these people always are. But we've got to tell the stories of the flaws too, because that's where the good parts come from.
It's also just the most interesting. You're not interesting if you're polished and perfect and neat all the time. That's what, despite his flaws, makes Paul so interesting. He's the chief of sinners. And he declares that that's more relatable to me than Jesus, I keep the commandments. Thank God I'm not a sinner like them. It's much more interesting to see someone through their whole picture.
So maybe as we think about that question that we asked at the beginning of who is our favorite sinner, maybe our favorite sinner should be ourselves.
Oh, man. You're really getting deep.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if we can't love our own story, you know.
Yeah. You won't be able to accept others. Absolutely true.
Yeah.
Mine's still Macho Man Randy Savage.
I mean, you know, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. It makes sense.
Just to kind of clear the...
Yeah. It's okay.
I'm not as mature as you.
I have a few more years, you know. 33 has really been a rough one, you know.
Yeah.
I'm getting up there with my wisdom, you know.
Goodness. So I think that's a good place to wrap up.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. So we started at just a bit about what this podcast is about. We asked some fun questions that we'll ask all of our guests. Mm-hmm. Then we tried to talk about superheroes for a little bit before we were derailed by Star Wars, the omnipresent gift that is.
It's just there.
But we'll come back to you in the future, and we hope that you'll go along this journey with us to talk about all kinds of nonsense, movies, music, late night TV, maybe memes. I don't know.
Oh, memes are
memes.
Great.
Memes are too visual.
We'll paint the picture for you.
Yeah. Picture.
Picture this. Kermit the Frog.
Sipping his tea gently in the sunlight.
But that's none of our business.
All right. Well, this is Aaron Hayworth and Laura Whitman. We will see you next time. #too blessed to be stressed.
Water cooler Christianity.